Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Chit Chat. I'm your host, Connor Reynolds. Today, we do not have our other co-host, JP Fischone, but we do have a special guest with us. Today, we have Nick Osborne with 108 Performance here. Nick, how you doing today, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Doing well here at the facility. Can never complain about that.
Yeah, me neither. I know what you mean.
Let's go, baby. So, Nick, if you wouldn't mind doing a little special thing for us and kind of go into a little bit about 108, a little bit about yourself, where is 108 and stuff like that to kind of get us started.
Yeah, so 108 Performance is a company here located in Knoxville, Tennessee now. We were in two locations in California, but after the COVID years, we moved to Knoxville. And which worked out great because I'm actually from this Knoxville area. So how I kind of came about 108 when they came to town is I know a guy, his name's Nate Headley. And Nate's a guy that I've always looked up to, always asked a bunch of baseball questions to, and a guy I trust. So when I gave Nate a call and was just asking about these 108 guys, he was like, man, you got to come meet these guys. So like I said, that was around the COVID year. And so obviously I'm not playing baseball at that point. So I came in, met Bleak, met Will, and just started trying to learn as much as I could about what they teach. And, you know, and then they end up getting me on board with them. And yeah, so that's how it all came about. It was literally, it was God's plan in action. Like looking back, it was amazing.
Let's go, baby. I love it. And so you had mentioned a little bit that you weren't playing during COVID. So what did your playing look like your career before COVID?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm from this area and I actually went to Tennessee Tech for college. And so it's kind of a funny story about my baseball career and how I ended up getting with the Athletics. In college, I was actually recruited as a pitcher. And always, because I always threw really hard. But, you know, in high school, everyone hits good. You know, like a lot of pitchers go into college thinking they can hit and then get exposed within a couple weeks. So, so I go to college. I'm there pitching. It wasn't until my junior year, our right fielder had to have Tommy John surgery. So they're like, Nick, didn't you hit good in high school? And I'm like, yeah, I did all right. So they threw me out there. I started playing right field. And I actually put up some pretty good stats. I mean, I hit over 300, double digit bombs, like, yeah, so it went good. And then, the summer rolls around and they're like, hey, would you like to go to the Cape Cod League? And, so I went down there again. They just wanted me as a pitcher. So I go down there to the Cape Cod. And again, it was, before the guys who were in the World Series got there. We're still playing games, so we don't have a full team. Well, again, one of the outfielders, like, got hurt, and they were like, hey, didn't you hit in college? So I went out there, played right field, went off for 2 or 3 weeks, and ended up getting picked up by the Athletics as a free agent, and then played a couple years in pro ball, and then the COVID year happened, and I started doing lessons, and then I got released, and then I just found this lesson path that I've, you know, gone down, so...
Hell yeah, man. That almost kind of reminds me of the story. Have you seen, it was with LSU and a kid came up and like hit like a walk-off bomb or something like that. And he was a PO. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Home run.
Yeah. And then in the post interview, the kid was like, oh, hey, coach, by the way, yeah, I haven't hit since high school. Like they didn't want me to get hurt. And the coach was like, what? Like that reminds me of almost like exactly that. Like, that's freaking awesome, man.
Thank you.
Kind of like a surreal feeling of like getting drafted as a pitcher, but going to college as a pitcher, kind of put it on the back skates for like 2 years. And then out of nowhere, just like essentially being in the Cape Cod as a hitter, being at a Division I school as a good hitter, and then getting drafted as a hitter. Like what kind of feeling or what kind of like thought process went through when you kind of like look back over from your senior year to COVID year, like, what's that thought process like?
Yeah. So like, that's kind of one of the reasons I'm over here at 108 is when I was pitching, whether I was pitching or hitting, I really wasn't thinking about a whole lot. I was just trying to throw it hard, trying to hit it hard, letting my body move however it wants to move. And then, when I got to the Athletics, I don't know, it was on me as far as, you know, I thought, well, I really got to dig into this hitting thing now. I have to learn everything about this hitting thing because that's what I'm doing as a job now. So I started looking on, you know, obviously Instagram, YouTube, you know, listening to everybody and hearing them talk about hitting and what you're supposed to do. And then I've tried those things and then ended up having not a good year the year before I was released. And I never could understand, like, how could I do it in college and it felt so good? How could I do it in high school? It felt so good. But then when I get to pro ball, it's like I've never picked up a bat before. Like, nothing feels right. You know, like, nothing in my body feels like I'm swinging hard or efficient or even trying to make contact with the ball. So
that's such a tough life, man. Like, to go from high of high to all of a sudden, like, reality slap in the face, just like, what the fuck? What I know about Tennessee Tech is they like to freaking hit bombs.
Yeah, so my sophomore year, I think we led the nation in home runs. We ended up making it to the regionals.
What year was that? Is that like 17, 16?
Yeah, 2017. Like I said, led the nation in home runs. Like, every hitting statistic you can think of, we're at the top. And then my junior year, speaking of that, Coach Braga at Tennessee Tech, I think that's one of the biggest reasons why I was able to do what I did, was because Coach Braga never really tried to change anybody's swings. He was, like, big on approach and having, like, that dog mentality of, you know, nobody's going to get me out. So I love that, you know. Like, he pretty much didn't care how you stood, didn't care where you stood. As long as you could hit the ball hard, like, that's what mattered, right? So that's what I tried to do, is go up there, have a dog mentality, and try to hit the ball hard.
Hey, man, dogs eat, baby. Dogs eat. Yeah. I love that. That's awesome. I remember, because I started coaching in 18. And so I remember, like, going back through and, like, looking at just different schools and their approaches. I was trying to find, like, what Twitter accounts to follow right when I got started. I remember going through and looking at, all right, who hit the most home runs? Like, I'm going to go try and just see if they post any practices, any hitting drills and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, I see a little Tennessee Tech. And I was like, Tennessee Tech? What the fuck? Like, who is Tennessee Tech? Like, you're seeing all these other, like, Power 5 conference schools, like, everything else, and then just Tennessee Tech. And so I went through and I looked more into it. I was like, man, these guys are dogs. Like, I love this. So to have somebody here on the podcast that was able to kind of experience that atmosphere and everything like that, do you feel like what you learned and what you were able to experience in that time from transitioning to being a pitcher to then also, like, a two-way, do you feel like you apply that kind of same similar atmosphere or philosophy approach with when you're working with your current students today?
Yes and no. I feel like today I know more about how the body moves and, you know, all the biomechanics side of it and, you know, all of that stuff. But I do like the dog mentality. I think with that mentality, you know, if you're just trying to get up there and hit the ball hard, a lot of good stuff is going to end up happening. Because that's one of the biggest things we teach here, is it's a natural move. And people mess it up, you know, people get in their own way of just letting their body do what it wants to do and what it needs to do. So,
oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, before we look to jump too much into your current students today, you lightly touched a little bit about it, of your transition from playing into coaching. What exactly got you into coaching originally? Was it, you know, minor leaguers not making the most amount of money? So is it one of those where it kind of started off as, like, obviously you don't want to say, like, you know, I strictly did it for the money, but was it like, you know, you're looking around, you're like, man, like, I could do some lessons to help out with, you know, what I need to do? Or, like, what kind of got you into starting with those lessons?
Yeah. So obviously it was the COVID year, and not a lot of people know this, but, like, we were on the phone with them and they were telling us, like, we don't know when you're coming back, just be ready any day. So obviously I can't just go out and get a normal job at that point to keep paying the bills. So, I mean, lessons was an easy way to, like, get my own training in because I'm already there and make some extra cash on the side. So it was really the best of both worlds. And that's kind of where I fell into, like, helping other kids. And even though I've early on, I've definitely taught some kids the wrong things, told them to think the wrong way, or, you know, we've all learned like that. So, and that's what, you know, when I started actually learning from different people and, you know, just trying to pick up what they're doing and just continue that process, that's where I'm at now.
And in my opinion, the biggest thing to is if you look back and say, like, I've never been wrong, like, I've always been right, you're not necessarily someone wants to learn from, because I don't think you're learning yourself. And so to be able to sit here and say, like, hey, I've learned a lot, you know, there was a point in which I wasn't necessarily teaching what I teach now, like, I think that is a quality or a trait that a lot of instructors, and I'll put instructors in some air quotes, they need. Like, there's a lot of people in this space, man.
Yeah, I love that. Like, I love when kids come up to me and ask me questions and I don't know the answer to it, you know? Well, why do I need to do this? You know, well, why do I need to load like that? Well, why do I need to stand like this? You know, and I think that's what a lot of kids are getting away from now, and why so many bad habits are being formed is because they're not asking the why question, you know, or thinking about it. Why do I need to do this? They just trust the coach. Everyone's turned into like a, okay, you know, I'll do it.
A little robotic.
Yeah.
That's the big thing is I remember going through, and during my time, I was a big why person. I always just, and I get my boss today, anybody that I've worked for, like, I ask thousands of questions and probably 80% of them are possibly meaningless or I can find on my own and stuff like that. But that 20% is where you get into that nitty gritty aspect where it's like, huh, like that ponder aspect. And I feel that there are some instructors that rather than taking it as a student saying, why do I need to do this, as the student asking for their career, almost I feel like sometimes they allow the ego to be like them questioning the instructor. And I don't necessarily think that's always the reason why the athlete is asking why. And I feel like that sometimes can be where we get into, if you're an athlete and you're, you know, middle school, high school or whatever, and you do ask a question of why do I need to do this? And you have, maybe it just takes one instructor to like, you don't, why are you questioning me? Then that almost makes that athlete for however long be scared or worried to ask that why. So then they get into the aspect where if you stand for nothing, you're going to fall for everything. You're going to have hundreds of coaches in your career. And so if you just take everything as a blanket statement from the coach, as the athlete, you're going to be doing something different every single time you get a new coach. And I mean, as we both know, at high school and college and even in the pros, the coaching is just a revolving door, baby.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could be wrong or you could be right. And one of my favorite things is to question everything, question the player, question the coach, like question why it's working, why it's not working. Like there's a lot of good programs out there that work for a lot of guys. I know we've had this conversation before, is if a program didn't work for anybody, the program wouldn't be a thing. So my favorite thing is to, okay, this program's working for this guy. Why is it working for him? You know, why is it not working for this other guy? You know, then we start getting into like individual stuff with kids and different players as far as, okay, why does he move like this and he moves like this and he can't do that position and he can do that position. It's, you know, comes down to like the body assessments that we do here too.
Do you mind running into a little bit of that, and don't feel like you have to disclose all the goodies and stuff like that, but for you guys at 108, like, what does a movement or a screening process look like for you guys?
Yeah, so when someone contacts us for the first time, we make everyone, all of our players, go through what we call an evaluation, where, you know, we sit them down and we just get on the same page with some stuff. Okay, well, and we ask a lot of questions as far as trying to get to know them, trying to get to understand why they're doing certain things. We always tell them to bring video, so we can say, okay, well, you're trying to load like this, you know, but in games, you're loading like this, you know? Why do you feel like that's a thing? You know, why are you trying to load like that? On this one, you hit a home run, you know, and you didn't load like that. So why in the cage are you loading like that? You know, and not to just tell them that they're doing everything wrong. It's just to get on the same page with, okay, understanding your body wants to move a certain way. And when you think another way, it can prevent you from doing that.
I like that. I like that. And we go through an evaluation or like an assessment here as well. And at the end of it, like you said, like, it's not to necessarily highlight all of the bad things that they do or anything like that. But I'll ask my guys, I'm just like, if you were failing a class at school, would you want the teacher to tell you in the middle of the year that you're failing or at the end of the year that you're failing? And every single time they say the middle of the year, I'll go, why? And they say, so that way I can make those adjustments by the end of the year. And that's all that screening process is necessarily, not to say like, oh, you are, you know, going to be Mike Trout or, you know, you're going to get cut in 2 weeks. Like, it's not to do that. It's just kind of give us a snapshot of where we are at this current day. And I think it allows and highlights the roadmap so that way we can work to get to that point where the athlete does want to be at.
Yes. I mean, absolutely. It's a collaboration. You know, you have to work together. You can tell a kid to do something until he's blue in the, or until you're blue in the face, but if he don't want to do it, he's not going to do it. You know, if he don't like the way it feels, like, you can't make him like the way that feels. You know, eventually you got to figure out, coming back to the question of why does he not like that?
100%. And I think it can go into multiple different kind of avenues. Do they not like it because they've experienced or tried possibly something similar with a previous coach, and maybe that previous coach wasn't able to fully answer the why, and so it made it difficult for the athlete to buy in? Maybe it's that they have like a sprained ankle, or I played with a dude that had a fused ankle that literally couldn't bend. It's like crazy weird stuff that is so individualistic, but to be able to find out like what is going on with that current athlete, that communication piece is so important. I like how you mentioned it's a collaboration. It's two people working together to try and acquire the same outcome. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I tell all of my guys, if we're on different pages of the book, if we're going through and we're doing a drill and I think that you like the drill and it's working well, but in your mind, you're sitting there going, this is the dumbest drill I've ever done in my life. Like, you're not going to go as hard as I need you to go in that drill to feel what I'm needing you to feel. So at the end of the day, you get in the car and you sit down with your parents and they're like, oh, how was that lesson, Timmy? And you're like, man, that was stupid. We did a bunch of drills. I don't even know why we're doing it, blah, blah, blah. Well, that parent, one, isn't going to re-up because they're getting the feedback that, you know, what they're doing is dumb. But two, as the instructor, you're going back, you're like, man, that was a good lesson. You know, so-and-so is doing this, blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, we're on separate pages. We're not on the same path. It makes it very difficult. So that collaboration process, I like how you worded that.
Yeah. So another thing that we do here is incorporate the weight room. And that's a way that we can make everything fun, you know. We have tons of stuff over here. We have the VersaPulley, the Vertimax. What do you call the thing you jump on?
Like to get your vertical or whatever?
Yeah, Vertimax. Yeah. We got everything you can pull and tug on and all the machines and all that. And all the kids like love that. And we figure out a way to use baseball into the weight room. So not a whole lot of programs or companies like work on rotational force. Like, we'll take them in the weight room and then do a squat, but how is squatting helping you in baseball? You know, like, that's the question. Why? Like, why are we squatting? Right? Why are we bench pressing? Why are we doing lunges? You know, and there's a reason why for all of that. It's just dependent on the coach of why they're doing it. Maybe the coach doesn't know why, and he just, you know, he did it and it made him feel strong, so he's doing it, you know?
Sorry to interrupt you, but I think that's where those instructors that get defensive of when kids do ask why, I think it's not to say like they're, when you don't know why, you get a little bit more defensive and really like, oh, I'm the coach, just do it. And it's like, well, why? Like, why should I do this? And if you as an instructor don't know why your athlete should be doing a movement, and if your only answer is because I did it, like, that's not good enough. Like, that is not a thing. Today's athletes are able to go on to Google and and apparently there's this AI thing that you can literally search up anything now. Whereas back in the day, like, that wasn't a thing. You had to go to the library or you had to go to somebody else to find this information. I think information is so much easier accessible to the athletes that we were training these days. And so it's one of those where if you don't know why, I feel like you're going to get a little bit more defensive in that situation.
Yeah, that's actually some of the stuff that we do in our body assessments is we take them to the weight room and just get them moving around. We have, you know, the water bags are a big thing. So we can manipulate every move that we do, every, you know, weight that we lift and all of this. And we can always manipulate it. And, you know, if a guy's doing a rotational force training this way, we can always say, okay, stand like this and then do it. You know, so we're always like searching for fills that we would create in our swing or in our throws. Like, you can search for the same fills in the weight room as well.
Oh, 100%.
Coaches know that.
And I think it takes you wanting to, well, one, you're not going to do something unless it's like, you're not going to change something generally unless it's like broken or if you see that there can be something better. And so a lot of the time I think that you have some of these coaches where it's like, well, it's worked for blank amount of years. It'll keep working and they'll never look to, well, what if it could be better? And mm-hmm. if you're not willing to take that risk of the first time that you guys sat there and were like, well, what if we tried this variation? I know for a fact you guys didn't sit there and go, I know this is going to work because we've never done it before, but it will work. Like, you don't know until you try it out. And so for you guys to be willing to kind of take that step and wanting to make those kind of adaptations in the weight room, that's something that I'm really loving, especially I got heavy into the aqua bags a little bit ago, found your guys' profile and doing a bunch of different stuff, like the different adaptations where you're able to, you don't always have to swing a bat to work on the swing. And I think that's a piece that gets missed a lot, like you mentioned. And I love that you guys are making those steps into finding that transition and that bridge from the weight room into the swing. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's funny that you would bring up like the, okay, why would you do it this way instead of this way? One of the other things that we do here that I love is the contrast training. Early on when a kid comes to us, we put him in all kinds of different positions. And, you know, like if we're talking about a swing, we would go hands lower, hands higher, open stance, even stance, closed stance, you know, stride length, distance from the plate, just the contrast, everything, you know. How do you know something's not going to work if you've never tried it before, you know? So it's almost like eliminating, not looking for the perfect swing, but like just eliminating what you don't need to do. You know, why don't you want to stride closed? Well, I can't get my top half all the way through because I lack thoracic rotation on my left side. So it's harder for me to get through the ball, you know, and you don't know that until you've taken a swing that's super closed off. You know, and then you're like, nope, after about five swings, you realize, nope, that ain't it. That's not even close. Feel good. So
I love that. And is there any other aspects of your guys' player development and training? We've touched a little bit on the contrast, touched a little bit on the weight room, touched a little bit on the aqua bags or water bags. Is there anything else that you guys feel is like kind of a big staple in what you guys look to do in your guys' player development?
Yeah, I think what makes us a different company, is that we're always evolving. Like just this past week, I can think of three drills that we've just made up on the fly. So like when people come here, they know that they're going to get a lot of good information. We're going to back it up with science, and then we're going to take them in the weight room and we're going to show them, okay, you're rotating fast and efficient on these positions. Right. And then we give them a bat and we're like, okay, let's try all these different variations of your swing and see if those same rotational forces and that same fill is showing up. And then, you know, we just go from there. But yeah, we're always evolving, making up new drills. We never try to like change the player into fitting our program. You know, if a guy's good and he don't like our program, like there's something wrong with the program. you know? So we're big on evolving and changing our program to fit everyone's needs within, like, you know, the basic foundations of what we believe in. But yeah, always learning, always changing stuff. And I think the players really like that.
That's awesome. And I think one of the things that can sometimes be a misconception is that, like how you said, if you have a good player that's just not liking the program, you got to adapt the program, right? Now, I don't always think, though, it has to be the exact program that needs to get adapted. Sometimes it has to be that communication piece. And I think not everybody always understands that. And like an example, just going through, we had a youth camp in here about a month ago, right? I'm going through and I'm instructing. I've got 5, you know, 10-year-olds that are all looking to try and do something. And I'll give, you know, my instruction. I'll send them out and I'll look at 5 different kids on 5 different tees. I hear the exact same words I said, but are doing 5 different things. And so for me as the instructor, that was kind of a time where I sat back and I was like, okay, is it these kids that are not listening, or is it how I am communicating what I need to get them to do? And I feel like sometimes like someone will go through program won't work and they'll just quickly jump to, all right, well, we got to change this. Like, not always. Like sometimes you just have to change the communication aspect of working with that athlete of, again, maybe adding more of a why. Or example, I've got one kid that goes to Colorado School of Mines here in Golden, Colorado, which is very high academic. He's like a astrophysicist major, some shit like that. I'm a college dropout. So like he's throwing out words. I don't even know what's going on. But then I also have an athlete that's, I hit ball hard. And like, that's right. Like, that's the most we get into it. So I have to go about explaining programs differently. Now it might be the same program, but how we get there and that communication piece might be just a little bit different for each athlete.
Right. And everyone interprets things differently too, you know? One of the things, another thing that we do here is talk about how one person can interpret something different than another person. You know, you have 2 kids, they can be twins, and you tell them to swing down and it's going to look differently. You know, they're going to interpret down differently. So it's just,
you know, crazy.
Yes. And you can tell, you, like I said, you can tell the group of 5 kids to swing down, go over there and swing down on the tee. And all of the swings are going to look the complete opposite, you know? So one of the, like I said, one of the things we do here is try to get in guys' heads, ask them a lot of questions. What does this mean to you? You know, if I were to tell you to swing into yourself, what does that mean? Okay. What does it mean if you think swing away from yourself? You know, the whole swing up, swing down. A-Rod talks about swinging down, and someone else thinks about swinging up. You know, Barry Bonds talks about his lead arm being his power arm. And then you have someone like Altuve, who the top hand rolls through really fast, and he's more of a top hand dominant kind of guy. So you just never know until you try those things.
I love it. I love it. And at your guys' location in Knoxville, when you guys are going through, do you guys incorporate like specific failure drills into your guys' programming? Like, how does failure get incorporated into your guys' player development programs?
So we do things a little different, I guess, as far as failure. It's more individual based as far as when someone might come in here and they need to be boosted up, you know, and then the next kid is thinks he has everything right and he needs to understand that he don't, and he needs to fail, you know? So what we kind of do is like put guys through this like assessment as far as, you know, having something that you're really trying to work on off of the tee and really focus on that. Once you get good off of the tee, you know, move to front flip. You know, if you got a good feel, then battle test it off the machine. Stuff like that.
I love it. Do you guys incorporate, when you guys use your machine, Do you guys go like any high velos, any like sliders? Like, do you guys add any piece of that to where, because, you know, fastball, set the machine up, you know, 50 feet away, easy peasy, BP down the middle. That's nice and everything like that. Do you guys incorporate anything where it may not have such a high success rate in your guys' training?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. We've done everything as far as machines in separate sides of the cage to one stacked on another to, you know, moving it up. That's what I'm saying with the drills. Like, we're constantly like finding new ways to do stuff and new ways to battle test you. We've done two ball where you put two balls in at the same time. And as you're doing that, you have to say one or two or something like that off of fast velo. That's going to be a challenge to anybody.
Oh yeah. I love that. And I think that's such an important piece in the training. I've seen it. I call it like cotton candy lessons, where essentially like it's just, you know, an hour of front toss. Maybe you get some little like fat dad BP in there and stuff like that. You pat the butt, the kid on the butt, and you're like, hey, like, you're going to be Mike Trout. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sometimes kids need that too. People need that sometimes. You know, you got a guy that comes in and he's feeling terrible about a swing, and you're looking at it and you're like, that's not that bad, dude. Like, you know, it could be a psychological thing. So yeah, boost him up. You know, sometimes you need to take an extra minute to hit off the tee to really hone in on what you're trying to do, you know? So it just varies on like who you are and what you're trying to do and where you want to go.
I love that, man. I love that. For you guys, when you guys are going through, and I'm assuming, I know you guys work, you guys have a lot of high caliber pro level players. But then when you're going through and you're seeing the average 14 to 18 U hitter, what are you noticing are some of the, I would say, more common? Obviously, there's, like we've talked about, there's such an individualistic aspect because of perspective for each player. But do you see just like a common kind of thing that you just like, if you had a megaphone, if you could just yell out to the entire world, like, what do you think would be like the, like a little quick fix, maybe not even a quick fix, maybe that's a bad word for it, but what could be like a fix that you see as a common problem for the 14 to 18 U hitter?
So one of the things that I've experimented with, cause I was one of these guys. But like the biggest thing that I've seen with people coming in is not knowing where their driving force is, you know, just swinging from the wrong areas. Yeah. So stuff like trying to get power from the wrong areas.
I got you. So kind of like looking for something, but looking in all the wrong rooms for it.
Pretty much, yeah.
That can be a frustrating process, man. That's so frustrating. And I can definitely see that being just like a common thing of, and I think that gets to where it's, they have access to a lot of this information, like Twitter, free. Instagram, free. YouTube, free. MLB, not free. Shout out Monford. But going to like MLB.com, looking at the like replay vault and stuff like that, like there's so many different things that you can do that are free, but there are lots of other places that are also free that maybe not be the greatest place to be looking for and stuff like
that. Well, that's what I was running into when I was playing, is you go and hear something and it could be right, you know, it could be right online for the guy that's trying to do it. My phone just said low power.
You're good.
I'm on there.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, it could be right for the guy that's trying to do it, but it could, like, it could completely mess up what you're trying to do or how your body wants to move.
Perspective, man. It's so important. Crazy. And I think that's also the difference of being the athlete that is in the video, that is able, when the video cuts, to be able to ask that why and that how directly to that instructor if maybe something didn't feel the greatest. But being the person just staring at the phone, you see this 30-second clip of this like kid or player or whoever just hitting absolute linias, and you're like, oh, that's the fix. Like, that's what I need to do. But you didn't see the hour-long session before that where they were, you know, just struggling, or you didn't see the hour-long session after that, or you didn't hear all the little questions being asked, and perspective's crazy.
Yeah, you don't even know what he's thinking. Is to you, it might look like, oh, he's trying to swing up right there, when in his mind, he's thinking, swing down, you know?
I have, we take notes at the end of all of our sessions, and I have a little section that I call takeaways, and that's where I'll have all of my athletes where I'm like, I do not want you to repeat what I said. I want you to tell me what you interpret that as. Like, if we're going through and if the cue is, like, you know, catching the ball out front, if that cue doesn't work for you, but thinking of a polka-dotted dinosaur, if that's what makes that click, baby, I'm writing down polka-dotted dinosaur. I don't care how stupid I look when we're in the cage and I'm yelling at you, polka-dot dinosaur,
because... But, I mean, hey, it's about results. What gets good results, man? That's all that matters. It doesn't matter what you think or what it looks like. And I think that's why coaches are so scared to try different things, is because coaches are so like, it's try, you know, it needs to look like this, you know, and if it don't look like this, it's something's not right, when that could just be what the kid needs to do to hit the ball hard. It's about the result. It's not about you, you know, or that the fact that you're telling him what to do. It's about the result. Is the kid good?
Did you see the recent video of Tiger Woods? I think it was at the driving range doing like an extreme, like hinge butt back kind of feel.
Yes. I've analyzed that. I've talked to the whole staff about it. And I was like, I wonder what he's thinking there. He's got to be thinking something. Golf is awesome. If you're in baseball, you need to play golf. I just, when I got released, I started playing golf. And I couldn't tell you like how many things like golf has helped me with in my baseball swing.
Golf will humble the shit out of you.
Now, I'm telling you, this is I am terrible at golf. My golf swing is terrible. Like, there's no way I would ever be good at golf. But it's helped me with my baseball swing. I've thought different things with golf that I've never really felt before with a baseball bat. And then I try to do it with a baseball bat, and it's awesome.
It's crazy how just that difference in what you're trying to accomplish and how long you've been working as something. Because, you know, baseball swing, you've been doing it for so long, you kind of almost put yourself in like a box of like how you're supposed to think, or how, like you said, supposed to look or whatever. You try something brand new, a little golf action. You don't know what it's supposed to look like. You don't know what you're supposed to think. So you just compete.
You're taking a stick and you're hitting a ball, you know? So guess your body is moving naturally how it wants to move to make the hardest contact possible. That's another really good thing that we always take into the cage here, is like, swing hard, you know, like, just, you can get so caught up in trying to manipulate certain things, and the whip still has to crack, you know?
I'll talk with my guys and I'll see them. We'll be going through something. I always understand, like, if it's if we're doing a new drill, if it maybe is new movement, maybe a new cue, like, kind of feel it out, but like, we'll jump on the machine, and I mean, we've done machine consistently, but I'll see a kid going through and they'll be swinging at like 50%. I'm like, all right, like, why are you doing this? I'm like, well, I'm trying to gain my timing and stuff like that. It's like, okay. So we'll go through and I'll have them try and increase, and all of a sudden their timing goes out of whack. And so I'll go up and I'm like, all right, so do you really feel going at 50%? Because now your bat speed's different. The timing of which you need to start and initiate your swing is going to be different, because you swing slower when you're feeling it out. You swing faster when you're not. So the timing of those two are going to be completely different. So you taking 20 pitches trying to feel it out, that timing that you're trying to feel out isn't going to be able to be applied into when you do swing fast. So why not just like start it off swinging fast, understand, all right, I'm this amount early or I'm this amount of late, and then make your adjustment from there.
Right. And we do both. There's times where we'll give someone a really heavy bat and turn the machine up and tell them to hit the ball and figure out how to get that bat to the ball. So obviously, you know, you're going to start seeing kids swing harder, right? And then they start learning how to like decel and put force into the ball. And a lot of clean stuff shows up when you're just taking a heavy object and trying to rotate with it. And then we've done the complete opposite, where we've got a guy swinging out of his shoes and we have to tell him, let's see how easy you can hit it here. You know, how easy can you make 95 look, even when you're throwing? I know Kumar was one of the big athletes that worked with 108. And one of the things that they used to do in his bullpens is not throw balls over 90. Kumar has the ability to throw the ball 100, but he feels most efficient when he's trying to think 90. And then in the game, it ends up being 95 to 100.
I love it, man. I love it. Again, I'll say it again. Perspective is crazy. Perspective is crazy, man. I love it. Do you have any podcasts, any YouTube channels, any Twitter accounts, like any books? Do you have anything that you will go through and you really like and kind of want to give a little shout out here?
Yeah, so for YouTube, it'd probably be Propel Hitting. Cameron Ginger, who just shot me a text, by the way, he should be coming down to the shop for Bridge the Gap. Yeah, so, and then Nate Headley actually wrote a book. It's called Who's on First. All of this stuff is available on the 108 Instagram page. Bleak wrote a book. It's Old School versus New School. Yeah, and follow Nate Headley on Instagram. That's a good one.
Let's go. And what's 108's handle on Instagram?
It's at the 108 way.
Okay.
Yeah. And then Ryan McMillan. I think it's the baseball lab, and there's an underscore in there. _lab, yeah, or something like that.
No worries.
Yeah. Max, actually one of the workers down here, he's from Australia. And grew up playing over there, and then he made his way down here to Knoxville. So Max, awesome. His Instagram's got a lot of really good information on there.
Let's go. Where can the people find you, sir?
Barefoot_baseball. So I'll be making some posts here soon.
That's Instagram and Twitter.
Yeah, I don't have a Twitter for you yet, just an Instagram.
Ayo, baby. Let's go. And what might we be able to kind of expect or possibly see on your page?
I haven't really figured that out yet. That's what I'm trying to do here. I don't know if I want to go with me talking in the cage or posting videos of big leaguers with some captions or a mixture of everything. So I'm still trying to figure that out.
Let me tell you, if I was to offer any possible advice.
Yeah, because I'm terrible at social media stuff.
Dude, I just found this thing. It's called like a Pivo pod. Mm-hmm. But what it does, it attaches onto like any mount or anything like that. And there's an mm-hmm. app that will, you can have it select to where this thing can rotate in a full 360 degree. You can have it follow your face, your body, and you can have it select to where you stay on the left side of the screen or you stay on the right or the middle. And it is just like $70, no subscription or anything like that. You can make it a webcam. So I've been trying to figure out, because I have a little extra space over here, of how I can incorporate it to where if I like needed to get up and do like a demo, it would just sit there and follow me. It'll zoom in, it'll zoom out. Yeah. I like this thing a lot. I just got it like last week, so I'm still playing with it a little bit. And then I also got, this is just like a little iPhone wireless thing. And so I'll clip this into my phone, have it follow me around, and you can just set it up in the corner of the cage. And if you like walk down, it'll follow you. If you go to the other end, it'll follow you. It's like a little personal cameraman.
Yeah. Send me the link for those. That's all. That's literally what we've been looking for. That would be perfect.
I got you, dog. I got you. Well, man, I appreciate it. Is there anything else you'd like to give the people?
Yeah, just come check us out. Come, go check out our Instagram. We have a link that, we're always posting new stuff and, different products that we put out and stuff. So yeah, go check us out.
Let's go, man. I appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.